It's the Elephant in the Dome, the official podcast of the Senate Republican Caucus. I'm Tracy Ellis. Washington State House and Senate Republicans unveiled common sense solutions to the public safety crisis ravaging communities and destroying lives across the state. At a news conference, Jill Brown, the widow of Clark County Sheriff's Detective Jeremy Brown, who was fatally shot last July while in the line of duty, talked about the need for action.
It was an honor to participate in several of the public safety roundtables that you hosted over the summer. And learn about how these bills are affecting not just law enforcement, but fire, mental health, and healthcare professionals, and most importantly, the communities that they serve. Sergeant Jeremy Brown of the Clark County Sheriff's Office was my husband, a devoted father and grandfather, brother, son, uncle, mentor, and friend to many. Jeremy was a truly exceptional human in all aspects of his life. He was a United States veteran before entering law enforcement, an MP in the Marines, and spent his entire life serving and protecting the lives of others. There are no words still that might appropriately convey what was taken from us to someone that didn't have the good fortune to know him. Jeremy was murdered in the line of duty on July 23rd. He was ambushed in a parking lot while conducting surveillance. His assailants were known to law enforcement. There was reasonable suspicion that they were trafficking in stolen firearms, but there was not probable cause for arrest, which under these new laws is the threshold for use of force to include vehicular pursuit. While I cannot confirm that agencies involved were already responding within the parameters of these new laws, I can confirm that two pursuits of these individuals were called off in the days leading up to Jeremy's murder, one of them just hours before. If the car had been pulled over, the guns would have likely been retrieved and my husband would be with us today. Let me be clear that I don't place any blame on the agencies that were involved, but on the environment that has forced them to question how they can and should respond. Jeremy had many concerns with the public safety bills that had recently been passed, 1310 being at the top of his list. Knowing this and paired with the understanding that it could have played a role in our loss, I was immediately compelled to give him a voice, because his was tragically and senselessly quieted in the course of his duty. So I move forward, reaching out to local legislators, gathering up information, resources, seeking allies, pursuing amendments to these public safety bills, and advocating for law enforcement is now my full-time job. I am not just Sergeant Jeremy Brown's widow. I am a survivor, stepping forward on behalf of our family to give my husband a voice and serve in a new way. It's important to acknowledge that I approach this opportunity as a thoughtful, compassionate, reasonable human seeking change. I am not here as someone that does not acknowledge the need for reform. I do believe reform is necessary, but there are many ambiguities and inconsistencies within this package of bills, and agencies across the state are interpreting them differently, which brings added concern. Obviously, my priority is 1310 concerning permissible uses of force. It's the most paralyzing to law enforcement and presents the greatest challenges. Removing an officer's ability to intervene unless they are witness to an event and prohibiting them from using their training and experience to manage a perceived or potential crisis in a fair manner is not the answer. And not just in situations such as Jeremy's. Consider someone experiencing a mental health crisis or domestic violence victims, property crimes. House Bill 1310 is adversely affecting the safety of our communities. As written, this new law ties the hands of law enforcement to help or intervene. And I understand and respect the intentions behind the bills. Absolutely. But unintended consequences have surfaced and more will be revealed the longer that we take to address these concerns. There will be more stories equally as tragic as ours if they are not amended. Combine that with the fact that so many officers are retiring early, lateraling to more law enforcement friendly communities, or leaving the profession altogether because of the climate in Washington, we could find ourselves in a very unfortunate environment, even more so than we do today. There has to be solutions that will appropriately serve communities and the men and women who have vowed to protect us. I want to participate in those conversations. And so I'm starting here.
Senator Mike Padden is the ranking member on the Senate Law and Justice Committee, and Representative Gina Mosbrucker is the ranking member on the House Public Safety Committee.
During the last legislative session, the majority party dropped the ball on public safety. They systematically removed some critical tools for law enforcement, reduced punishment for criminals, and missed opportunities to protect the public from repeat DUI offenders, and flat out surrendered on the war of drugs by, in effect, decriminalizing hard felony drug possession. We know there's been some disastrous results from these policies. Violent crime is at a 25-year high. Murder is up 80%. Aggravated assaults are up. Rape is up. These policies, including some particularly bad anti-police legislation in the House, are making Washington a dangerous place. And this is verified by law enforcement throughout the state. So, and on top of that, it doesn't seem that they've got the message, because the House, two House Democrats have introduced legislation to reduce the penalties for drive-by shootings. Just last month, we had a report from the Puget Sound Auto Theft Task Force reporting that 798 cars were stolen in November of 2021 in Pierce County, double the number from November of 2020. And that it can be tied to the anti-police laws stopping pursuit of criminals. We know, for example, that $1 million of equipment was stolen from a car dealership in Lakewood in Pierce County. Police were unable to pursue because of the anti-police laws, and the thieves have not been caught. We've got to repeal some of these laws and allow for pursuit when there's reasonable suspicion, not have to go and wait for probable cause. And I want to indicate that one of the reasons I think property crimes are up so high is the legislature's disastrous response to the State v. Blake decision, which was issued by our state Supreme Court on February 25th of last year, and simply said that you need to put knowingly in the legislation for felony drug possession that somebody knowingly possesses fentanyl or heroin or methamphetamine. But no, the legislature didn't do that. What they did is said, we don't care, in effect. There's no accountability. The first two offenses, there's no punishment. And we are preempting any local laws that were passed that were different, such as was done in Marysville and Grant County. Those got repealed by this legislation, Senate Bill 5476. And then to make matters worse, what they say is, well, we'll refer you to treatment, but no accountability. You don't have to say where you're going to treatment, who's keeping track of the treatment. And then if somehow somebody has kept track and there's been these two prior incidents and you get to a third incident, somebody's kept track, the most can be done is a misdemeanor, which is only 90 days in jail, a fine of up to $1,000. And a lot of prosecutors, including the King County prosecutor, they don't even prosecute those misdemeanor crimes. Now, in my district, in Newman Lake, out by the Idaho border, we have seen tagging by gangs. This is a rural area, and it's unheard of. Fortunately, the citizens out there immediately covered up the tagging. But to see this gang activity be emboldened by the legislature's response. And you know, these folks that need to have methamphetamine, need to have heroin, or need to have fentanyl, how do they get the money to buy that from the gangs? They do that by committing property crimes. So we have seen an escalation in these property crimes, I feel, as a direct result of the legislation that was passed last session. So we need to correct that.
The worst part of all of this is I heard from a great man that doing nothing should never be an option. And that's what we're doing. We're literally taking someone who's suffering from addiction and doing nothing twice before we take some action. And that should never be the case. So for example, if someone who's addicted walks up to a doctor, a teacher, a police officer, a legislator, or a reporter and says, I need help today. I want to get off drugs. I don't want to do heroin or cocaine anymore. Can you help me? Often there's no place to send them. So we're very passionate as Republicans about those who are suffering from addiction, but this State v. Blake should have never come down without having the infrastructure in place first, without having the beds for those who need the help so that we can do something about it. This is devastating and it's been very harmful. The House Republicans immediately threw five bills at it last year after February when this was introduced. Every member in the Public Safety Committee came out with a bill to try to fix this and all of those unintended consequences that the court ruling left. And we're still working on that today. We have bills in the House and Senate on fentanyl, which we keep seeing in the media that it's one of the number one killers in the United States. This has to be addressed. And you could argue easily that this is more of a problem because of the State v. Blake decision in Washington State. We do have a bill, a really great bill I hope you look at. It is House Bill 1656. And that has to do with changing the definition of theft. And Representative Griffey's done an incredible job the last couple of years fighting for this. So please look at that bill and help us support it. Another area that we're working on from both chambers is putting victims and safety of our community first. We heard on listening tours throughout the state how important this is. I'm out of time. I want to be respectful so we have time for questions, which we're looking forward to, and just touch on a few of those areas. We're working hard on human trafficking. As you know, that's been exponentially increased as well. We have a bill regarding the missing and murdered Indigenous persons. This is the Bring Them Home bill. We've been working on this for 4 or 5 years on the House side, and we're working very hard to make sure that we do everything to find justice for those Indigenous persons who've been missing and have been taken from their tribes. This bill will do five different things. I'll just touch on two of them. One of them is it'll simply allow the tribal members to pray over the body when they find a murdered loved one before the body is moved, but after the lead investigator has signed off. We need to respect the culture of the tribes at all times. It'll also set up a receiving house, a pilot project, if you will, in order to have a place for those to go who we find that are trafficked, that are tribal members who've been taken from their tribes and put in a trafficking ring. So it'll give them a safe place to help build their lives back with the resources they need. We have a bill regarding survivors, and we've heard stories of how they've been branded or microchipped with subdermal implants in order to for the perpetrators to keep track of where they are. This is a heinous crime and needs to be addressed. We're asking the OCVA in order to give them some money through the Department of Commerce to get that tattoo removed. I mean, how harmful is it to look in the mirror every day and remember the tragedy that your life has been through? Just trying really hard to listen to the voice of those survivors who are in horrible ways. We have bills on domestic violence. Representative Clippert has introduced again an offender registry to make sure that the perpetrators don't go to the next person and harm them repeatedly. We have a bill on coercive control, trying to get at the genesis, the very beginning of why people go from, I love you so much, I want to marry you, to murder of the same person. How do we fix that? And how do we break that cycle of domestic violence? Senator Linda Wilson has two great bills. One allows victims to be present at all DV sentencing hearings if they choose to do so. It'll be part of the healing process. And then she also has a bill that would be able to withhold bail felony DV in felony DV cases. Representative Jenny Graham is graciously working hard to find crime victims and family scholarships for those who have been suffering currently and have been through traumatic injuries due to the crime that we have rising in our neighborhoods.
The news conference was for Safe Washington, a Republican plan for increasing public safety, reducing crime, and putting victims first. Representative Eric Robertson, a former Washington State Patrol trooper, also spoke.
I spent a career in law enforcement and hope that my experience, having been in dozens of pursuits during my career, some of which ended in apprehension of the individual, and some I called off because they were unsafe and didn't, it didn't outweigh the risk that was involved. And officers around our state, whether they're state troopers, county deputies, city police officers, they face that decision every day. And in most cases, they skillfully and professionally make those decisions. And we have a better community because of it. I ran the amendment last year to try and fix the flaws that were in the legislation that went into effect in July. And I'm really proud and pleased to have continued to work with the chairman and ranking member of the Public Safety Committee over the interim, discussing this issue and how we fix the flawed bill that's been in effect for 6 months and 5 days. We've seen crime exponentially expand due to this and other poor legislation that was passed and went into effect July 1st. House Bill 1788 is the fix to our pursuit policy debacle that has been in place for that 6 months. It simply changes the standard to the reasonable suspicion for a criminal offense, which was the standard prior to July 1st. It also puts in safeguards. It mandates supervisory involvement. It also mandates that the officer and the supervisor involved evaluate the environmental condition, speed, traffic, pedestrians in the area, as well as the weather and how that could affect the outcome. It'll clearly expand the ability for officers to pursue those folks. Like I said, has that discretion in there to do so, puts the parameters, those sideboards that I just explained around it, and also has an accountability measure in there. And we have great law enforcement accountability measures in the state of Washington. We have a model policy at the Washington State Patrol that's used throughout the U.S. For accountability. So we need to put the decisions back with law enforcement officers and their supervisors. They need to be able to risk that balance between pursuing and the risk against failing to apprehend a potentially violent offender. Because when you're pursuing someone, you don't know what they've just done. And they could be that very violent offender that remains out into the community and continues to engage in criminal activity and making our communities more unsafe. So we need to revise the pursuit policy for Washington, put the officers back in the driver's seat with supervisors there to help them, and accountability for error. So I'm hopeful that that bill will be heard. I'm in conversation with the chairman and the ranking member to advocate for that. And additionally, you know, these things sometimes cost money, and we've got a great profession in our law enforcement officers out there. And Representative Drew Stokesbury and I just introduced House Bill 1787, which is going to be funding the recruitment, retention, and support of the profession, because we want the best of the best to be policing our communities and being partners with the communities for public safety. And so I hope that folks will take a look at 1787. You know, it's a fair amount of money, but it's what's needed to make sure that we have top-notch law enforcement officers that we're recruiting, retaining, and supporting through their professional careers.
Senator Keith Wagner talked about the dire situation at the state's corrections facilities.
Public safety doesn't end with an arrest. It doesn't end with a prosecution, and it doesn't end with a sentence. It ends when people serve their sentence, pay back their debt to society, provide justice to victims and their families, and when they get the tools they need to correct themselves and reenter society as productive citizens. And to do that, our corrections facilities need to be properly staffed, equipped, and funded so they can provide a ripe environment for that rehabilitative service. Why then did the Democrats, in the middle of a COVID crisis, underfund our operating budget by $90 million in the middle of a pandemic? That was a choice. So corrections has had to cut staff, services, programs, and they're reducing beds by over 3,000. I think 3,300 beds are going to be reduced. I will be asking the legislature to restore the Department of Corrections budget so we can get back to rehabilitating the people that are in our charge. And our prisons, our correctional facilities, need to be safe, drug-free places. I'll reintroduce a bill that I ran before that would put body scanners in every Department of Corrections facility across the state. We had those provisions to increase body scanners in the budget in the session before last. That was vetoed by the governor as part of his COVID budget reduction plan. I think that we need to do a much better job, not only for our correction personnel so that they're working in a safe environment and they're able to do our jobs, but also for the inmates that are there that deserve the best we can give them to get them back on track.
Find us online at src.wastateledge.org. Follow us on YouTube and Twitter at WashingtonSRC, on Facebook at Washington Republican Senate Caucus, and on Instagram at WASSEN Republicans. I'm Tracy Ellis. This is The Elephant in the Dome, the official podcast of the Senate Republican Caucus.